Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d4tradio.com. Welcome to Don't Despair, a podcast dedicated to the Genesis role-playing game published by Fantasy Flight Games. Each episode, we take a deep dive into higher-level concepts of Genesis to help players and game masters get the most out of their games. Welcome, everyone, to today's episode. We are going to be talking about social encounters, finally. And today we have only Matt and Anastasia and myself, Scott.
Good evening.
Everyone else is doing other stuff, but this was the plan for this podcast, was that it was just going to be some of us on every episode, not everyone on every episode. So hopefully that will continue and we can get podcasts out a little more quickly for everyone. So social encounters. What are they? Why do we need social encounters? What is even the point? We have guns. We have knives. That's how we solve problems. Not so much. Sometimes we just want to talk it out because that's actually the more efficient way of solving many problems.
Yeah, and words hurt sometimes, don't they?
They do hurt. They hurt in my heart.
Especially when I talk over you. That's great.
You can talk over me. This isn't just me talking. This is a conversation.
It is.
Right? We all have something to say.
It's true.
But be quiet.
Okay.
So when we do a social encounter, what we're doing is we're going to have our PCs and probably some NPCs. They're going to be arguing with each other in some fashion. One side is trying to convince the other side of something. And there's really two different ways we can go about this. If we want a simple social encounter, this would be a social encounter with a lowercase s and a lowercase e, then it's a single role is usually all we need for that. It's going to be opposed, whatever kind of thing that the argument that's being made, whatever tactic that the active character is using, they're going to use that particular skill, meaning if they're trying to intimidate someone, they're going to be using a coercion. If they're going to try and lie, that's deception. If they're going to try and be, you know, super nice guy, that's charm. What are the other ones? What's the last one? Leadership. We're going to try and convince either one or more people to be on your side, to take a direction from you. That's leadership.
Or inspire.
Inspire, right?
Yeah, if you do your Braveheart speech, that's leadership.
Yeah, you're going to give up every day from this day till that for one chance.
One chance. Did I miss where you talked about coercion? Did I already zone out?
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, okay. I did intimidation.
Oh, let's just edit that part. Pay attention, Matt.
Stop reading Reddit or whatever.
No, I'm sitting here staring at the little blinky lights.
And that, what skill you would defend with is on the social skill interactions table. That starts on page 55, which unfortunately is actually separate from the social encounters section, which starts on page 118. Yeah, 118. So you always got to cross-reference those or just, you know, have a really nicely organized GM screen. It's available in my Dropbox, Drain Smith's Dispensary of Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Nice plug.
Thanks. You know, if you don't know about my stuff by now, but you're listening to this podcast, I question my ability to properly get my information out there. Mm-hmm. I feel like you should know my stuff if you're listening to this.
Y'all should get on out there and get that thing from the Dropbox. There's all kinds of good stuff.
Or don't. I don't get paid for any of that.
No.
Only my stuff on the Foundry. Mm. Which you should definitely go buy. But anyway, today we're going to talk about social encounters still. And that's a simple social encounter where you've got like maybe like a simple rival or the stakes are low and you're just trying to get in and out really quickly and get the story moving, right? That's a simple social encounter. Sometimes we want to do more complex things. We want to do the full courtroom drama or we want to do
negotiations, interrogations.
Yeah, full interrogation or a negotiation, like a peace treaty kind of negotiation, right? Mm. So those are all examples of social encounters with a big S, big E. These are the things that we really want to, we want to make sure everyone has a chance to participate in it, to somehow affect this narrative, and maybe other things will come out of it. But it should be this big back and forth where we're causing strain left and right. Everyone's using crazy social abilities all over the place. And it's a social melee, right? This is the social equivalent of our combat encounter. As such, we're going to have rounds. You're not necessarily going to be using initiative, though. Initiative's not really necessary. Everyone's going to get a chance to go in a round. So if someone hasn't gone by the end of the round, then they should be able to have a chance to go. But usually it's going to be more like everyone is going to decide on, okay, who should be going right now? And maybe like, oh, this is the perfect time where I could say this. And then they'll do their action. So the main thing you want to do when you are going to do a social encounter is you have to determine what the goal is. What is the whole point of even doing this big thing? If you've got a straightforward one, like an interrogation, then the goal can be, you know, to get the suspect to confess. Or, you know, if you are the suspect, then it's to, you know, get the police off your back, right? Convince them that you are involved. Or in the trial scenario, if you are one of the attorneys, you're going to try and convince the jury or the judge that your client is innocent, or that the defendant is guilty, right? And that's going to be a whole dance of various social checks.
So that sounds like it goes above and beyond the one and done style of role that you would use for like a simple negotiation check, like you're trying to buy some magical components from the shopkeep or something like that.
Exactly.
So you would use this in a different circumstance.
Right.
It also sounds like a really good chance for non-combat oriented characters to truly shine. Like all of those presence 3, presence 4 archetypes with like brawn 1 who are absolutely useless in a fight.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
So this is why I think social encounters are really important to Genesis, because you have these other character builds that are so very possible, and we want to give them scenarios in which they can be useful. And they can be useful when you do the single role social encounter, lower S, lower E. But there's not as satisfying as for a character build. When you are able to create a full social encounter where they're able to use different social skills in different ways and achieve different things, then oh boy, then that just, it really opens up how that player feels about that character and their usefulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always had a problem with the lead up to a combat encounter being one or two roles, but then the combat encounter could take, you know, 20 minutes and be more than a handful of roles. So this seems to level that playing field a little bit and provide interesting ways to solve problems other than punching somebody in the face, for example, or, you know, cutting them.
Large scale, complicated social encounters also allow for a different kind of adversary design. Mm-hmm. So because usually in tabletop games, like in D&D and Pathfinder specifically, right? Your big bad is like a dragon or a lich or somebody who wields a tremendous amount of power and is terrifying in combat. right? But D&D and like Pathfinder and stuff like that are not very good for antagonists who are like very human, aside from like mercenary captains and knights and stuff like that. So, for example, if you are playing a game in which the big bad evil guy is like the prince of a city state, right? That guy is an administrator. He is not going to be, you know, going in guns blazing, so to speak. Like, that's not what he is about. Like, he rules a city.
Exactly.
And it really gives, and the social encounters really give those adversaries a chance to shine. Like, somebody who is terrifying, not because they are, you know, a literal dragon or, like, a guy with a big gun, but because they can cow you into submission and because they wield a tremendous amount of power in the world.
Yeah, in my Android adventure that's available in the Foundry, Brain Drain, spoilers, one of the adversaries that the PCs can go up against is the CEO of this megacorp. And it's not a, it's a social encounter. It's not a combat encounter. This person, the CEO, is not anyone that could even remotely be like difficult to fight at all. Their whole life is built towards, you know, negotiations for contracts and, you know, convincing people to do certain things so that they have like this negotiation and leadership skills and charm skills. And like that's their whole thing. And so you have this social encounter in part of the adventure, and part of it is the PCs have to buy into this is a social encounter, and that they are going to be negotiating or arguing with this character. Now, up until this point, most of it is combat. So they could go into that room and kill this person, and that would be the end of it. But there are things that they will lose, and there are things that they will not gain by doing that.
There is also the idea of like antagonists that are like so powerful that fighting them in any way, shape, or form is just stupid. Like, right. Yeah, you can go in into the king's audience chamber and, I don't know, stab him or something like that in front of everyone. And then you are going to live for all of like 5 minutes after that.
Right.
So social encounters are also a good way to confront powerful adversaries that don't operate on the same level as player characters. It's a good way to bring them down. Like, if you can't kill them, humiliate them.
Exactly. And even in the dragon scenario, right? The character shouldn't be attacking this dragon. What if it was a social encounter instead? And you convinced the dragon to perhaps trade with the PCs. Or to, hey, maybe just, like, take a break. Don't kill any villagers for a while. And we'll make it up to you in this other way.
Yeah, like sacrificing a virgin once every full moon or something like that.
Or it's like, you guys have you guys read The Hobbit?
What? Who wrote that? Just kidding, yeah.
So like in The Hobbit, when Bilbo is running around Smaug's lair, he's invisible, but he has to keep talking to the dragon. Could be something like that. You're trying to keep the, you know, terrifying, powerful adversary occupied while some of your party members are trying to get something done, trying to steal something, or trying to, you know, open up an escape route.
Yeah.
That could be a social encounter.
Yeah. You know, and you touched on some interesting things there that with a lot of historical gaming, you would write down things like your motivations and your flaws and your desires, and you kind of play to them, but they didn't really have a mechanical effect. But in social encounters, they are right there, front and center, and they can actually hurt you or they can benefit you. So I really like that piece of this.
Right. So in a big social encounter, if you are able to tailor the thing that you're saying to use the target's one of their motivations in some way, then you can get boost dice for that. Alternatively, if you happen to fashion something where the target is able to defend more from that argument because of their motivation, you'll actually get setback dice.
But if you are able to determine those things through the encounter, you can use those things against them. Can you?
Exactly.
Mm.
And here I want to talk about a little bit how a social encounter plays out actually at the table. A lot of people, when they're role-playing, the GMs will ask that the players say literally what their players say. And this is interesting. It can be good role-playing, but it can actually be hard for some people because they, they're less socially adept. And so they may not know exactly what to say, but their character definitely does. And so they're playing the social character to play the social character, not to specifically exercise those social skills themselves.
Right.
Right? And we don't ask players to swing a sword specifically, right? We assume that their character knows how to do that correctly. And so we hand wave it. Well, I'm going to attack with my sword, right? Or with my gun, or however what we're doing. And we don't need to know as players specifically the mechanics of how all of that actually works. We hand wave it all.
Hmm.
I suggest when people play social encounters, they do something very similar. Now, what you can do, rather than the specific words in which the character may say, you would say the kind of the outline, the gist of what you're trying to do. And then you can maybe come up with the specific words of what that would be. But instead, be like, well, I want to appeal to his vanity and say something that makes him feel good, right?
Hmm.
That's generic enough, and that's a nice charm roll, right? It's a charm roll, but you know you've put in the extra little bit about a flaw, a vanity flaw.
Or if you're trying to engage in some like verbal back and fro, you could just be like, I say something very cutting, and it uses my clever retort talent or something like that, because you don't really know like. You don't also really don't want to like insult people at the table.
Mm.
Some people find it that some players find it difficult to be like mean to each other.
Mm, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah. Especially if you're doing some kind of like PvP kind of thing where two players are, two characters are going at it. Not the players, obviously. Two characters are having an in character, in game fight. And if you do it generally, you talk in generalities, then it won't feel as if you're attacking that specific player instead.
Yeah,
because you want to say that, like, Grog is a fool, not Steve is a fool, Steve being the player.
Right.
Oftentimes, I will take the player's narration, if it's exceptionally good, and add boost dice to it. And even if they fail, which is actually happened to me as a player. I thought I provided a great narration, but apparently it was lost in translation and I failed. But if just like you would anything else, if they narrate it particularly well, throw a boost die at them. Well, maybe not literally, but I mean, you could.
Oh, I was just role playing.
Just literal dice throwing.
The other side to that, I think, is those cases where someone's like, well, what exactly do you say? And they don't come up with anything great. And they're just like, well, I just say, how are you? Well, then they just automatically fail. And like, they get a bunch of setback dice. Like that's not great. That's not fun. That's not that character being its best. That's
right.
The the yeah, player's not that great at it, so they shouldn't and, be penalized for it.
Yeah, and it just like makes the player feel stupid too. Like, this actually has happened to me like in a couple of like D&D games a while back, where I can be smart and I can be witty, but sometimes, you know, the brain takes a little bit of time to cook. Like, I can't come up with a great response on the fly, and I got penalized for that. It's just like, I swear, I'm not an idiot. Like, it's just very early.
Also, you know, sometimes games involve alcohol
or
other recreational substances, and you know, we're not always at our peak.
Yeah, you know, but Beer League is still fun role playing, you know, if everyone's in the league. But yeah, I mean, we are playing characters more often than not that are not like ourselves to experience something different. And yeah, if you can't describe how you use your axe, you're not generally penalized for that. You say, I chop him, but you know, you don't. Some characters will describe with great flourish how it works, and some will say, I just chop him. Let's move on.
Chop him real good.
Yeah, chop him real good.
Okay. The other part of social encounters is that you don't have to actually succeed all of the way for it to be a win or even completed. You can actually come to like a middle ground, a mutually beneficial agreement. And so you can kind of determine what that might also look like before you get started, or it might become obvious through that the playout of the social encounter. So like, for instance, a negotiation is a pretty straightforward one for this scenario. So, you know, you want to buy something for the lowest possible price, and the person selling it wants to sell it for the highest possible price. And you'll start at some point, usually the asking ticket price, and it's going to be way more than you want to pay. And you're going to negotiate back and forth down to a middle ground. You're going to find the compromise. You're like, all right, so somewhere half in between of what my asking price and your asking price is, we're going to come to, and we'll both agree. Okay, that's the final price. This can happen in political negotiations as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? If everyone is unhappy, that's a successful political negotiation. Is that the?
That is the saying I recall.
That's the saying, yeah.
Another scenario that comes up for these kind of negotiations is if your party is a group of like independent contractors or scavengers or adventurers or something, and you are trying to negotiate how much you're going to get paid for doing that terrible, dangerous thing that your potential employer is sending you out to do. Like, and that's where your social character comes in to, you know, kind of negotiate your pay. Like, we are going to go kill a dragon. You can't just pay us like 100 coins for that. It's an entire dragon. Like, you got to supply us. You got to, you know, give us some goons for the dragon to eat.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot for a full social encounter, but it might be interesting to play the full thing out, yeah.
Now, you did mention something there, and you mentioned this in the last episode too, Anastasia, about when you're having a social encounter and you have characters that are not adept socially and how they can actually be a detriment, even more so than a non-combat character in combat, how they can just duck and hide. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, and I think that if you have characters who like wear their hearts on their sleeves, right? So, for example, you have your like big bruiser is a very emotional guy, and he cares a lot about everything. He cannot keep a poker face, you know, to save his life. If he's in the room during a tense like negotiation or a social encounter, his face might just, you know, the adversary might just like look at him and kind of have a better idea of like what your party thinks about this whole situation.
He could blow it for everybody.
Yeah, it could blow it for everyone. Like if he starts like getting too excited, or if he gets like too mad, or if he like starts like looking sad and stuff. And the adversary would realize that they've hit some kind of nerve and they would push on that.
Yeah. What do you advise in situations like that?
I'm going to take a page from Red Markets, which is another game. It's a zombie game of economic horror by Hibernon Publishing on RPG on DriveThruRPG. And what they do is they have in their like negotiation scenarios, they have the less socially adept characters have the option to partake in like scenes that take place concurrently with the social encounter. So you would basically cut from the social encounter to whatever they're doing. If they're trying to like squeeze the adversary's associates for like information that your negotiator could use, or if they're like scouting out the adversary's like location, something like that. And that could provide in like a Genesis context, like a boost die to your main negotiator while keeping them away from the scene, or a setback die if they screw up.
I think in Genesis, you would see that more as like a skill challenge.
Yeah. Hmm.
But that actually sounds interesting in where it sounds like it would be more like a flashback rather than a concurrent thing.
Well, the concurrent thing, it's like, I forget the example they use, but it's something like they are currently sabotaging something that the adversary was going to like use later.
Lesser social characters, they can occasionally get a hit in a social encounter. The same way your non-combat characters can occasionally get your hit in a combat encounter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a little more difficult for the non-social characters to do any strain to a target in a social encounter. And this is because all of the roles in a social encounter are actually opposed if you're doing them to a single target. And so some of the social encounter may actually be choosing the right social skill that the target maybe doesn't defend as well against. And that takes some kind of like maneuvering and trying out to figure out, you know, what they're really doing there.
So another use for your, as Matt put it, for your doofus in a social encounter, if your doofus is just a really, really beefy boy, girl, or, you know, a person of another persuasion, and if you're in an interrogation scenario, your doofus can rough up your mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pick him up by the shirt fronts. You know, hold him up a little bit, shake him around. That's worth a blue die.
Yeah, that's a couple of boost die to your coercion check.
Oh yeah, and you know, this makes me wonder if there wasn't some kind of hidden animosity towards the combat min-maxers in there, because you know it's not as bad if you make a non-combat character in a fight, but man. And surely there was no ill intent there, but when you think about it, really, you know, you made this really just kick-ass fighter, and he can't speak but three words. Well, he can blow it all for everybody, and all of a sudden you're on the prison planet now. But surely nobody had that kind of ill will.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think it was just maybe a pendulum swing or... you know, it's just a filling in of a hole that was there in RPGs in general.
Yeah, I can't think of another system that did social encounters is stratified with as much hook into your character and your initial character design. I mean, there's some of them, like World of Darkness, had some aspects of that, but what do y'all think? Red Market, you mentioned. Are there any others? Fate Core seems like one that might have that. Nothing like this.
Yeah, I don't know. Definitely like the vampire games like had, you could do so much social stuff, and even like the powers available would allow you to more social stuff. But I don't remember ever playing in any White Wolf game that had this level of social interaction with the actual mechanics.
Yeah, it was one role.
Most of the stuff was actual like acting out the whole thing rather than letting the character be the character. So we've talked about, you know, our goal and winning our goal, and then also achieving a mutually beneficial agreement. But how do we even get there? And that's through doing strain. That's the main mechanic of the social encounter, where you have your PCs doing strain against an NPC, and then NPC doing strain against the PCs. Now, if you have everyone participating, then the PCs will be able to do way more strain to that single target than that single target will be able to do to all of the PCs. And this combat works the same way. And you usually got to build your adversary with that in mind. Now, in a social encounter, there may be a way in which, well, there's only going to be this one active character, like in the courtroom scenario. Only that attorney is really going to be getting up to do the attacks against the jury or the judge. Now, the Shadow of the Beanstalk book has a little extra section on social encounters where it talks about, you know, where you have the one against many scenario, and then you have an adversary that actually has supporters. And those supporters, while they may not be being targeted by the PCs, they will have their turn to target the PCs and do some strain damage on their own. So that's something to keep in mind when you're actually building a social encounter.
Are there any other aspects you should possibly consider as a GM when you're building social encounters that would be different from traditional encounter design, as we have previously discussed?
Definitely pay attention more to the strain threshold, mm-hmm. of course, and try and get a gauge of how much strain your players can possibly output. But remember, there's no soak involved.
Mm.
Instead, it's going to be those defensive social abilities.
Mm. So words really do hurt, especially if you're a minion.
Oh, yes. Remember, because minions and rivals, they don't take strain. It goes right to their wounds. And in the book, there's recommendations for how to what to do when a minion or rival is being targeted with a social check. And that's, you know, that strain becomes wounds. But instead of having that minion or rival be, you know, knocked out from actual wounds, it just means that they capitulate and they don't drop dead. Right. Mm-hmm. So you've got to take that into consideration when you're doing this kind of stuff. Now, what that means, if you have like some sort of weird combat and social encounter combo, and that's a really advanced kind of scenario, right? Well, you can totally do it and it can be amazing. It just means that, you know, those wounds that the minion or rival has taken has also worn them down and makes them more vulnerable to capitulation.
I like the thought, though, of doing actual wounds. There was previously Anastasia had spoken about using scathing tirade to make minions actually, you insult them so bad that they drop over or their ears bleed and they run from the room screaming. It's a nice visual.
The next thing to talk about is healing strain or inflicting strain through advantage and threat. So on table 17/2 on page 121, it gives the table on how to spend advantage and triumphs in social encounters. One advantage is recover one strain, just like in a combat encounter. And on the threat and despair table, it's, you know, one threat, the active character suffers one strain. These can cause social encounters to keep going for a while. Because remember, in a combat encounter, you can't just recover wounds that easily. You can recover strain the same way. But in a social encounter where the fuel of everything is strain, and both sides are recovering strain probably pretty regularly, unless there's something else you want to do with it, then it can draw it out. So what I recommend is getting players to use the other things rather than the recovery or the suffering of strain. The boost die to the next check is a great one for one advantage. The notice a single important part of the ongoing encounter. This is a hard one, but as a GM, you should really try and get your players to use that one, or actually, you know, you can force it on them. You say, okay, that advantage is being used for this because you notice this. If they get the two advantage, that's learn a strength or flaw of the target. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's what you really should be using your advantage on. It takes three to get the desire or fear, but to get the strength or flaw, that's enough to start tailoring your arguments for to get those additional boost dice to make the rest of the encounter go a little more smoothly.
Yeah, so you spend two boost die to get a boost on every check against them, if you remember to call it out. Yep. That's awesome.
Another thing about social encounters and how prominent and detailed they are in Genesis is that it actually enables you to make social character builds, as opposed to, oh, he has two ranks in charm and one rank in deception. There are talents that are specifically tailored for social characters. One of my favorite ones is, I think it's a tier one, and it's called Clever Retort. And what it lets you do is, as an incidental, you can, I think, expend a story point or spend strain, don't quote me on that, to give two threats to another character's social check. And that has absolutely zero use in combat, aside from, you know, if a nemesis is using like a inspiring rhetoric or something like that, or making a coercion check. But it's incredibly, it's like super, super good in social encounters.
Yeah, that particular one where you get two threat into their pool. Mm-hmm. If that threat, you know, survives to the end of the roll, that's the great one, because that can't, that's the active character accidentally reveals their own strength or flaw. Yeah. Now the other side can start using that against them. And this is critical to social encounters. Mm. It's learning your foe, figuring out, okay, how do you, you know, turn that metaphorical knife on to get them to capitulate a little more quickly.
And Android has the wonderfully named Good Cop, Bad Cop. And having a character with Good Cop and another character with Bad Cop is incredible, honestly. Yep,
those are specifically designed to work directly with each other.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I propose another talent called Hungry Cop.
Here's a note that reminds me that real coercion is rarely direct physical threat, especially in that interrogation. Right?
Yeah, I feel like coercion is less like we're going to. I feel like coercion is less like physical, you know, we're going to punch this guy, and more like we're going to tell him that we're going to punch him.
Yeah, or it's we're going to tell his mob boss that he has actually been cooperating with us the entire time.
Yeah, or we're going to tell, like, oh, I'm going to tell your mom. That's coercion.
Yeah. Mob bosses are kind of like moms.
They're basically moms.
Mm-hmm. More scary, though. Oh, wait, less scary. That's the one I'm
Yeah, less
with.
Scary, I was going to say.
Okay, that's social encounters. I hope you learned something from that. We're going to move on to our next segment, which is Roll Them Bones. We're going to set up a little scenario. We're going to roll some dice, and then we're all going to interpret those dice in their own way to figure out what the outcome might be. This week, Anastasia has a scenario for us. Take it away.
All right, so our setting is a kind of generic science fiction setting with starships, and our party is a group of smugglers. And they have just landed on the port of Scylla, and they took their ship through customs. Unfortunately, some of their goods have been seized, and they need to get them back out from the customs office before the personnel there take too close of a look at it and see that it's like something super, super illegal. So we have our character, Marie, and she is talking to the security guy at port, and she is trying to make a charm check or negotiation, up to you, to, to get the goods back. She's trying to kind of frame it as if it was a mistake. She's doing the outraged customer routine. Which skill do you guys think would be best for this?
See, that's interesting. That's so most players would be like, oh, I want to use my charm skill, or I want to use my negotiation skill. So this character is be like, well, I'm going to do this tactic. Which skill would that fall under?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm.
Yes.
So if we're going to go with the outraged customer, that's kind of like coercion, isn't it?
Is it? Or a deception?
Yeah. But also she is kind of shady and not actually an outraged customer. She just wants her stuff back.
So this is fully lying the whole way.
Yeah.
So that's definitely deception.
Okay. Well, I have her character sheet right there, and it says that she has 3 cunning, so that's 3 green dice.
Mm.
And she has 2 ranks in deception.
Okay, so then she gets 2 upgrades. So that gives her 2 yellows and a green, 2 proficiency dice and 1 ability die. Now, the defense skill for deception is vigilance.
Okay.
What is the vigilance of our cop, of our
customs officer? So our cop is kind of an old hand at this. He's pretty experienced. So I'm going to say that his willpower is 2. But his vigilance is 3.
Mm. Can we throw some environmental modifiers in there? Like he hasn't finished his coffee yet this morning? Or maybe he has.
I'm going to say that he is a bit of a sexist creep. So he's not really like expecting like a woman to be super smart.
Mm.
So like I'm going to give him a black die for that.
Nice.
Because she's just a lady,
Oh, if Marie picks up on that.
Yeah, she does.
Mm.
So blue guy for her.
Oh, so she's like, she can tell this old guy definitely gonna be sexist. Well, so I'm gonna ramp up playing towards that sexism.
She's doing a Valley Girl accent.
Or the equivalent of it, whatever it is in space.
Yeah.
A space girl accent.
She's from the Space Valley. Well, but does she learn this flaw of character through the social encounter? Maybe she doesn't realize it just walking in the door.
Well, I think it's more from the roleplay.
Okay.
Just because he's like, you know, like, don't you worry your pretty little head about that or some
don't
awful
you worry
stuff
your
like
pretty
that.
Little head there, lady. We'll take a look at that. Go have a seat.
Yes. So
yeah,
we get started.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. So we get started and the officer is saying something like, we've impounded your stuff, but, you know, little lady, don't you worry. We'll get it all taken care of here in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And then she starts in with her spiel with the angry customer.
Yes.
Okay. So we've got her pool of 2 proficiency dice and 1 ability dice and 1 boost for reading the situation. And we have the customs officer's dice of 2 challenge dice and 1 difficulty dice, right?
Yes.
And a setback die because
he underestimates her.
He underestimates her and is sexist. All right. I'm going to roll this because I got the good sound on it.
Do it.
Yeah.
All right. That's nice.
It's awesome.
What is it?
Okay. Let me read them bones. Let me figure it out here. Oh, we have a despair.
Oh no.
Oh
no. This does not look good for Homestar Runner. Mm-hmm. Alright, so that cancels. That is blank. Part of that. that whole thing goes away. All right. We have one success, one threat.
Okay.
And one despair.
All right.
Dun, dun, dun. What a cool roll.
So who would like to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
All right. So she clearly succeeds. So so she's going to get her equipment back. That's the first thing, definitely, right? But we've got this despair and this threat. So something really bad's got to happen here, but doesn't get in the way of what's happening, obviously. So first off, we're going to give her one threat or one strain for the one threat. But the despair, I think the customs officer, he's going to take a kickback. He's going to be like, all right, well, you can get your stuff back, but there's a 500 credit fee payable directly to me, and you can move on through.
I like it.
Cool.
All right. Yeah. So, the success clearly says she does succeed, and there's with one threat, you know, it seems like it's a strained negotiation, especially since the despair shows up. And I'm going to pull that old ex-boyfriend card shows up. He walks in from another berth and immediately blows her cool demeanor. And that's where the strain comes in. And the despair adds complications because he knows exactly what her game is.
Okay. So success, obviously she succeeds. She gets her stuff back. Threat, it's just so stressful dealing with old men like that. Like she just feels like she just aged by 20 years. So just like doing this voice and like acting this way while he's like kind of oogling her. So she takes some strain from that. The despair is that she did have to get pretty shrill, like, you know, to like get her stuff because she was like kind of like trying to like do the whole hysterical act, right? And another cop overheard her arguing about this.
Mm-hmm.
And like this other cop, she thinks that this whole thing is sketchy and warrants further investigation, potentially adding further complications down the road.
Ooh, I like that one.
Mm-hmm. Way better.
Yeah,
than
the adding complications like later on. I love that stuff where like the players will have forgotten about it by the time it actually happens.
That's good stuff.
All right, let's roll them bones. And that's our show. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you next time.
Yep.
Wherever you are, good day. This episode's featured podcast is the Guardians of the Wills podcast. In this podcast, Neil and Dustin speak about all things in the Star Wars EU, plus a little live play and some general Star Wars tomfoolery. If you like Star Wars, and chances are you probably do, it's worth checking out.
Don't Despair is a member of the D20 Radio family of podcasts. Don't Despair is a podcast created by fans and is not affiliated with Fantasy Flight Games. The views and opinions expressed are that of their author and not of Fantasy Flight Games. Genesis and all related trademarks are owned by Fantasy Flight Games. The content of this podcast is owned by Don't Despair and is provided for entertainment purposes only. Don't Despair accepts no responsibility for any injury, dismemberment, or death resulting from the use of the information contained herein. Consult the doctor if fun lasts for more than 4 hours. The Don't Despair podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons, Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License.